the one who cares for us and calls for respect to him. Our topic tonight being, as it was mentioned, as respect and care for the elderly. And Lee used a little bit of thought of the elder, and an elder can be an ordained, and it's true. But I think tonight we will go a bit across the board of the elderly. And Bible school sounds like a place that you can ask questions. So if we have time, maybe we can you can jot some questions down that you might have. And I feel like I have a good bit of help here tonight in case we get stuck on a question. So I'll feel right at home with that. But tonight is a setting that I think we shouldn't take lightly. We have sometimes have digs and scoff and kind of laugh at the whole idea. And it's true that we can laughter is a better medicine than the drugstore. And so that's true. But be careful that we don't think lightly of the elderly. There's a few things that we want to look at and that why that's not a light matter. But tonight I want to call you to, while we're looking at this topic, I'm not sure if you came. I think maybe most of you came looking at some elders, and I'm not sure where you put me. I'm in the mid-1900s, so you can put that wherever you like. Whenever I feel a little bit older and feel like I'm kind of approaching that, I go to some place like Fairmont or something like that, to the home, and I talk with a 90-year-old, and so, how old are you? Oh, I'm 65. Oh, my, you're young yet. And so then I go on that, and I'm satisfied with that approach, but reality still sets in. I'm still a mid-1900, and so I call for this area tonight of respect and care for the elderly. And one thing I encourage us tonight is to think about this real carefully, and I encourage you tonight to stay at home in your thoughts. We have this thing that's rather easy to do, is when we hear and think about things and something that worked for us, and then we see somebody else and we have lots to tell them how to do things. It's the same as when somebody takes ill and somebody and they find they have an illness, and all of a sudden you have lots of answers, you know. And they looked in, peeped in the window and saw a little part of it, and they have all the answers. And we so easily do that with older people. And it's a very real thing to them, that family, trying to decide what to do. And you come along with all the things, well, we did, and this is the answer. You're only seeing a small picture of it. It is okay, I believe, though, to share your setting that you might have enjoyed and something that worked for you. But then leave it at that. And not think, well, you ought to be because this, you know. And please don't do that to people. So with our thoughts, like again I say, let's stay at home tonight with our thinking a little bit. And I'd like to share just a little bit, in light of that, a setting that we've experienced. And it was unique, and no one else will fit to that setting exactly. Joyce's father, he was in his about 70, I believe, and had an accident. And after that accident, he had some injuries that made him not capable of being at home. He was at a nursing home for rehabilitation for a period of time, not all that long, less than a year, and passed away. And that over that time, the home did what we couldn't do at home and took good care of him. And it was the best we knew how to do. He needed extensive medical care from time to time. And so that's how it is. Joyce's mother, she we run track records on her grandmother was 96, I believe, when she died. And Joyce's mother is almost 89, living and doing well, reasonably well. And she, at a young age, I thought, she wanted to go to home. And she was living in the house and everything. It was just so ideal. She wants to go home. She wants to go home. And we finally honored that and helped her get to Fairmount, and that's where she is and enjoying life there. She's a little bit normal. She, at 80, almost 89 years old, she has some pains and moans about them sometimes. And she's, you know, she wants to go to the doctor. And Some time ago, the doctor kind of chided her. She was, oh, she hurts. And she said, Mrs. Groff, you're not 25 anymore. You understand that? Yeah, okay. And so sometimes when, you know, the older, those aches and pains come, and that's part of it, and we're not there anymore. But she's enjoying a lot of fellowship there. And as she still is thinks about how often we get there and don't get there sometimes, and we'll try to do the best we can. And my father, he was a very short tenure. He was, I remember so well, it was the last week in October in 1987. Dad, I still can remember, my office was to the back, and he'd walk in kind of a hall, and the door, I'd often be open to the back door. And depends who was there, he'd step in, or if nobody was there, he'd step in and talk to me when he wasn't on a regular assignment. He just kind of dropped by as he could. And one particular day, morning, John Reininger was there, a friend of ours, a sales friend. He was a very personal friend, and Pop knew him good enough. He stepped in, and John Reininger says, Mr. How are you, Mr. Martin? And Dad said something I'll never forget. He said, I'm not sure. And I never heard him say that. He always said, I'm fine, I'm doing well. And he said, I'm not sure. And it went through me, and something's not right. And within that week, we realized that he had extensive cancer and went to care in the hospital just a little bit, but care at home until January 18th, 1988. Just a few months later, he passed away. And we had a hospital bed there at home and care. And he chose not to go to lots of extensive care. And we honored that. And we were able to take care of him there at home. We had some nursing care and hospice coming in and those kinds of things. And it was very, very helpful. And then my mother, she has a little bit of a track record of elderly in her lineage as well. The Hirschfreundschaft. And so she, of course, the Hirschfreundschaft is the other way. They have heart struggles and die young, some of that segment, very young. And there's a lot of those. But my mother, almost 92, she took ill. She was living alone and wanted it that way. She was about as round as tall. She had that Rhodes lineage in her. The Rhodes have some of that. And she was doing quite well, and she had seizures, and things went that she couldn't be as strong, and she couldn't quite care for herself anymore. And so we saw some help, and I'll get to this maybe just a little bit later on, but she wanted to be there, and we were able to get a caregiver to live in there, a team girl. And she just was a real gem to us. And she would go home times and we'd be there. And she lived there, and very inexpensive. And she thought she was making out like a bandit, you know, the income she had. She was very good. But you see the difference. And that worked for us. So how do I look at it when I see somebody else? I don't know their whole setting. And each one is different. So I say all that to say is let's be careful. Let's look, first of all, at respect. You can turn to 2 Kings 2 to take a look at a scripture that you'll recognize very quickly, and that is respect. I think in all this, we should hear what they have to say, and we'll talk more about that, what they have to say or what we have to say. But the Bible setting is of extremely clear, and this setting that we'll look at in 2 Kings 2, 23 is that of disrespect. Elisha had just done a great work and for God, and showed himself strong and showed God's mighty power through his life. And Elijah passed off the scene, and Elisha was now here on the scene. And in 2 Kings 2:23, and he went up from thence unto Bethel, and he was going up by the way. And there came forth little children out of the city and mocked him, and said unto him, Go up, thou ballhead, go up, thou ballhead. And he turned back and looked on them and cursed them in the name of the Lord. And there came forth two she-bears out of the woods and tare 40 and two children of them. And he went from thence to the Mount of Carmel, and from thence he returned to Samaria. And so you see the setting that it was a very serious matter. It says here they tear him up. Other versions do talk about death, that the children were killed. And you think that's a brutal thing. I suppose there was more involved around this whole thing, but here nor there. The fact of disrespect. And there would go over to maybe where Lee would, maybe he would have been more of an elder, of a leader. But the setting is of that disrespect is very, very serious. And I'd like to look at the joy of respect, just to flip your page in your Bible to chapter 4, 2 Kings 4. And I'd like to read a few verses there in light of high respect. 2 Kings 4, let's start at verse 8. And it fell on a day that the Elisha passed to the Shunem, where was a great woman, and she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that as he passed by, he turned in thither and ate bread. And she said unto her husband, Behold thou, I perceive this is a holy man of God, which passes by us continually. Let's make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set up for him there a bed and a table and a stool and a candlestick. And it shall be, if he comes, he shall turn thither. And he fell on a day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, Call this Shunammite. And when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said unto him, and he said unto him, Say now unto her, she was translating here, Behold, thou hast been careful for us with all this care. What is it to be done for thee? Wouldest thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host? And she answered, I dwell among mine own people. And he said, What then is it to be done for her? And Gehazi answered, Verily, she hath no children, and her husband is old. Excuse me. And the story goes on that God blessed her. He blessed her with children, with a child. And that whole story, we won't go into that. But you see the high respect that she had, no occasion to have respect. And tonight we want to look at respect not only to our elder, like grandma and grandpa, and dad and mom. We want to look at overall in general. We'll go both ways. And so here is a setting of respect and disrespect. And I don't know how you are, but I'm not old enough yet to forget those childhood stories. But one that I'll never forget is reading a little story out of the beehive, Hive of Busy Bees. And the one is that's the setting when we're expecting grandma to come to their house. And they were all excited, a boy and a girl, and I didn't reread it to get it, so I have it from way back. And they were all excited about grandma coming to their house. And she didn't come and didn't arrive, and they were out, went out and played with some children. And while they were out playing with children, they were doing their thing, and an old lady came walking by, and they started scoffing at her, the group. And then some of them threw a stone. And so they took up, the little boy took up too, and threw a stone and hit her. And it was kind of the group fact. And so that went past, and they went home. And they came home, and here this old lady was. It was grandma had passed by. And they didn't know what to do with themselves. And putting in my own words here, they didn't know what were they going to get chided, and their heart was all abeat. And grandma didn't say a thing. She was glad to see them and happy, and she had brought them some gifts. And they were just waiting for her to say something, and knew that the explosion would come, and she didn't. And so they were outside playing, and it finally got the best of them. They went in and told Grandma that they were with that group, and she knew that, but that's forgiven. It's just take it as a lesson. And I'm not sure, it's those kinds of little children's stories sometimes that go a long way. And that whole area of respect has probably rooted in my mind and helped me as much as anything to think about how an adverse time, group of, just carrying on it's not okay just because that's how it was. And so let's be careful. So there we see the extreme contrast of respect and disrespect. By the way, you can turn to Titus 2. Respect works both ways. And I'm not sure if you're old enough that you felt you'd come tonight so you'd hear what young people are supposed to do for you. It works both ways. And Titus 2 has some counsel for the older as well as the younger. And I'd like to read a few verses in Titus 2. But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith and in charity and in patience, and aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober and to love their husbands and to love their children, and be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husband, and that the word of God be not blasphemed. Young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded, in all things showing thyself the pattern of good works in doctrine, and showing uncorruptness and gravity and sincerity. And so I read Titus 2, there is absolutely no place to get old and grumpy. Okay, we sometimes almost feel like, wow, they're kind of getting old and grumpy. That's not okay. And the antidote for that, getting old and grumpy, is don't live your life that way. If I have a reading, it's kind of interesting, but it's the old man you'll meet down the road. And it goes on and seesaws back and forth, that if you're a cheerful person and a Christian like you ought to be, that's who you're going to meet. But if you're kind of grumpy and complain and moan and groan, you're going to meet that person down there. And so it's not okay to get old and grumpy. You stay righteous and give counsel when you get old. And that all calls for respect. However, if that's not the case, you still respect. But I think it gives you more opportunity as a young person to give counsel to that person that didn't, that old man, old lady that didn't take right to her living. Love, listened to the older people. They have a quiet life. When an older person tells the same story over and over and over, I'm starting to think that maybe I'm getting in that category, because I think sometimes I catch myself, I probably said this before, and so on. And they will do that very readily. They will tell you the story over and over and over and over. I enjoy, there's kind of two groups of people that I especially enjoy. I enjoy you all tonight, but children and older people, with older people like that. And so I do some Bible studies and retirement homes and the Calico Youth Senior Center and things like that. And Joyce sometimes will say, what are you going to use this morning? Well, I'm going to use the same as last week, because they're going to tell me the same story, so I'm going to tell them the same story. And it probably would work, because they wouldn't mind. Their capacity of their is starting to limit, and it's not as strong, and so they tell you this. But I want to encourage you, we can laugh tonight. We're not laughing at anybody, but when they're telling you the same story over and over, inside roll your eyes, but don't scoff at them. Listen to the stories, and they'll tell you, and you'll have them memorized. And it's important that you memorize them. And a case in point is this is a Norman Good, who was a member there for many years. He hailed from Indiantown along to the faith group and was there. And as my boyhood days, I remember back in Springville that I went to school with the first day of school. I went with his oldest son, Alton, and I went and got on the bus. And so I kind of had a long kin with Norman. And I visited Norman a number of years already, and he'd tell me the same story. He'd tell me about the story about him and his wife, a little camper, and went to Alaska. and some of the unique things that happened. But then he'd also tell me about how that he distinctly knew that was to be his wife, and it turned out that Emma was his wife. And he has these stories. And the reason it's important to listen anymore, Norman has lost a lot of his memory and a lot of things. He doesn't talk anymore. And when he comes, he knows who I am. And he's limited to the point that he acknowledges things. So now, it's interesting, I tell him these stories. And he that's about all I get out of him. He doesn't visit. But when I tell him about this story about going to Alaska, you remember, Norman, you remember when you and Emma he remembers that. And it's a pretty warm feeling to me to know that I'm touching his heart and mind. And you remember you were at this, he actually goes back to the old Horning way back and had a crowd that he picked out. He remembers that. And so when those stories come over and over, memorize them just a little bit, or at least pull some high points out. The other part, unique part of it is Norman's hard to hearing, and they'll do this. They'll turn over to their old language. He wants to talk Dutch. And so we always talk Dutch. And so I'm talking to him, and he, Norman, wie ist dein Dog heute? And I have to talk real loud. And the nurses, they get a charge out of there, for the matter, because they say that's their Dutch class. They can, down the hall, they can hear us talking Dutch. But they enjoy that. But that's kind of how it works. The other thing that you get in those people that are aging is stories that are off the wall. They don't fit. And I've been around watching this setting, and I've really noticed there's something very important about this. Just this week, we talked with a person. They were saying that Dad's saying this story. It's not how it is. And children, when Dad says a story, it's not, and they get frustrated. It's not. And in his mind, that's how it is. It's just how it is. And for them to correct and feel bad that he's saying the wrong thing, I learned from the nurses what you do. And they come off the wall. I went to see Raymond Arts number of years ago now already. He lived right next to us. Never talked Dutch to him in my life. I didn't know Raymond Arts talks Dutch. And went to visit him at Fairmont. He lost health pretty quick. And went to visit him, and he started talking Dutch to me. And so I was all right. Maybe he wanted to learn Dutch, as some of you said. So he starts telling me, my war hydrina, my war velschken and bashta. And he goes on, we were down husking corn today and down the field there. And the nurses, I learned from them is, oh, really? Well, how was the corn? Oh, it was really nice. And we talked about husking corn. And he was all right. But when you say, no, no way, Raymond, you weren't husking corn. And he was husking corn. That's exactly what's in his mind. That's all that's in his mind. He knows it was. You're the one that's not understanding. We were down there husking corn today. So those off-the-wall stories, laugh with them. You take them and take them, expand on them. And they're all right. But you're trying to chide them. Doesn't work, because that's what's there. That's all that's there. They weren't where he is and where he feels he is. And so I think we need to be careful with those things, not try to correct them. And I learned that from nurses, because you watch a nurse coming in and somebody says something really off the wall, and, oh, really? And so how is that? And they take it off and everything's fine. And so I think in respect to our elderly, remember where their mind is. It's not all that sound anymore. Be courteous and be kind and be encouraging to these older people. They find themselves at a place where they aren't worth anything anymore. And I think we can do an awful lot. I believe that we ought to all be encouragers one to another, young people to young people, everywhere. But I think we can be an encourager to them. They feel like they're not worth anything anymore, and they're here just waiting to die and in somebody's way. And just a tip might be that you know that those older people may be prayer warriors. And tell them that, well, you know, something that you really appreciated, if you pray, then say an occasion that's coming up. In fact, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll write it down here in the paper and write it big, as though you're writing it to a first grader, and print. And remember this in prayer, because we're going to have this coming up and we're not sure. Take that and just have that as a prayer. And I would really appreciate that. And it gives them some worth. And it's also showing respect that they are worth something. And whatever that thing might be that you use, that's just one tip that I learned to appreciate and enjoy. The Bible calls us to respect, as I mentioned. You need not necessarily turn to it. I'll just read a few verses. Proverbs 16, 31. And the hoary head is a crown of glory. It is to be found in the way of righteousness. Proverbs 20, 29. Like this, the glory of a young man is his strength, and the beauty of an old man is his gray head. So just as honor and great as a young man's strength is, so is the honor of the gray man head. Leviticus 19:32 talks about honoring the hoary head. I know Lee talked about that. Pull that up. Whew, a lot of that. Matthew 15:4 and 19:19 calls for honor to father and mothers. And we have that many, many places to honor father and mother. Matthew 7:12 talks about the old man and the young man, both to treat with kindness and respect. Let's go to care just for a little bit. Who are the elderly to you? Now, we may have been thinking about my mom and my dad and grandma and grandpa, but it's really broader than that. It's the elderly or whoever the elder that we're around. It's been a real blessing to have their faith to be across the road from. I still go back, Denver Nursing Home has got a new name now anymore, but there's a special opportunity that we have there with the elderly over there, and just a few of them is they have the parking lot they're constantly using. There's a dozen or more cars there. They park over on our side. They're tight with parking, and so they park there, and that's fine. So we're serving the elderly by doing that. The other thing that happens, they have a key to the church. Whenever they need chairs or tables, they can come. I tease them still. I never know if you need us or we need you, but it's an open relationship. And they can come over and get whatever they want. We're also a legal binding is that we, in a case of emergency, they would be able to move the patients from the home over into the church for a period of a few days, just for a care or a place to shelter. And so it's an opportunity we have to give care there. And the other is that services. Well, there's lots of other churches as well, but we do Sunday afternoon services periodically, all scheduled. And then occasionally, they're not going to show up. Could you come over? So somebody goes over and helps them. A pastor help. Some time ago, got a call in Denver. They called, and they has a lady, she's dying, and they want a pastor. And so I was able to go, and there, strange lady, and she, in her weakness and in her dying breath, she could quote Psalms 23, and we walked through some of this. And then I said to the nurse, I said, is there family coming? And no, she said, there's no family involved. And so there she died, a strange pastor and a strange nurse. And so we can, in many places, we can care. Another blessing that we have is, I say every Sunday morning, if the weather is at all nice, fair, we bring anywhere from 2 to 6 to 8 people over on a Sunday morning and line them up. And it's part of our care that we can give. Last Sunday they wanted to come over for the ordination. They heard enough in the morning about a service in the afternoon and about an ordination. I didn't know sure what an ordination was, but they wanted to come. And so there was a number of them over last Sunday afternoon. And so it's a blessing like that. Persons that live close by, the Bible talks about who is their neighbor. And I might have related this story again, but Delvin and Benita newly married, and they moved into a little bit of a new area. And one evening while they were closing of the day, and this neighbor, Charles Good, pulled in his big Cadillac and came and knocked on the door, and We just want to stop by and see who's here now. He was a little elderly. And he said, just want to check if it's people that are neighbors or if they just live close by. And that really made quite an impression on us getting into a little bit of a new area there. We want to be neighbors, not just live close by. And so I think, as it was then, it was interesting. Del and I shared in the funeral of the goods, and we became neighbors. And so I think that's we should do that. Business people. Oftentimes, business people we deal with, and the salesperson, supplier, even customers, and then they're older and they pass off, they're gone. And I believe we should follow through with them. I had a number of opportunities. Years gone by, I worked with a lot of Amish, and I've been a number of Amish viewings and some funeral. And it's an occasion that has a lot of appreciation that you go by and visit those elderly. Some of those community people or business people that we relate to, and neighbors even, they don't really have time to talk, and certainly not church, and they're on their way. But one day, when they're on their ill or deathbed or elderly in a home, they have lots of time, and they'll be really delighted to see you. And I think that's one of the ways that we can give care to older people. It was a setting with Jack Robinette, a nutritionist for many years, and Delvin and I decided we should go to his wife's funeral. It was up in Hershey, and kind of didn't know for sure. But as it is, those people don't have a lot of people around them. And so there was only a few people there, probably two dozen at the most, and a number of other business people. And Jack couldn't get finished expressing his appreciation. And then he related things that Dottie would often talk about, that times when they were in our homes for a meal, and that's so treasured. And so we care for those people. Old man there in the town is Charles Stroll and Paul DeHart. You go to the funerals and their family, and there's just a handful of people. And I think we should care about those people, even not grandma and grandpa. Lamar Hadberger was a neighbor man there, never really had a lot of time to, certainly not church. Truck driver, no reflection of truck driver, but part of that rough edges was his motorcycle. And so he learned that he was taking ill to cancer and went to visit him one evening. And I was kind of excited about going, and I walked up the hall and getting to the room. It was literally full of tough motorcycle guys. I really wanted to turn around and leave. No, the Lord convicted me. I went up and there was enough room. Went over to Lamar, talked with him, and told him that I just want him to know that we really care about him, and if there's things we can do for him, and just really want to do what we can. And he had a lot of other company, and I'm going to be on my way. And I was stepping away, and he said, Earl, he said, come back. He said, won't you have prayer for me? And yeah, sure, I'll have prayer for you. And these fellas, it's interesting. God moves in a setting like that. They took their hats off, and I just said, well, I kind of announced that Lamar, you know, ill with his dying, and turn to God, and had a prayer there. And it was just a reminder that we should care for people that are not just grandma and grandpa, and let's look at how our family can be a help to other people. Let's go to grandma and grandpa for just a little bit. They are getting to be just a little bit out of the loop. They are not aware of the latest technology and out of loop and the medical things. And I think we should walk alongside them in their medical help. We should be able to care for them and carry the burden of making decisions. An elderly person, and I do this especially when I'm not in the loop, but they're telling me, you know, they kind of grumble, they're telling us what to do. I said, well, this is this way. For many years, you told them what to do, and that was right, and that was the way it should be. But time has come now that it's right for them to tell you what to do, and you listen to them just like they listen to you. and take their advice, because it's very important. Take them to a doctor, get them to earn their trust as you can, and go along to the doctor visit. And I learned from Dr. Nolan Byler, a friend of ours from Ohio. He said, you know, act like you know what you're doing. And setting like that, take a clipboard along and act like you're. And so the doctor's saying the thing, scratching notes. And so they, the doctor, if we accuse doctors of doing what they do sometimes, not all doctors, certainly not. A lot of good doctors. But they, well, we could do this test and we do this test. And the list goes on. And in the middle of that, they also know that they have insurance. And so the list goes on. Well, why are we doing that test? Well, if we find out that that's the case, what are we going to do? Well, nothing to tell you. Well, then we're not going to do that test, okay? And the doctor soon starts to dialogue in a more real manner rather than just, whew. And so we should be helpful to them in that way. Listen to what they have to say. Help them make end-of-life choices. End-of-life choices. If your parents, and maybe go closer home, if you don't have a durable power of attorney, should have a durable power of attorney, and that is so that you can make decisions for them. If you get power of attorney, that's one thing, but you should be the durable power of attorney, and so that you can do all things, all their business for them when they are gone. If there's nothing done, there's going to become a time that they can have a savings account or a safe deposit box and places like that. You won't get in. It takes an act of Congress to get in there. But if you have a durable power of attorney and produce that, you will get in that day and you'll walk right in. And that should be in place for people. And by the way, most of us sitting here tonight should have a durable power of attorney, because if something happens to us, boy, incapable, boy, what do we do? A durable power of attorney gives a right to sell a car, sell real estate, gives full right. And so we should have those kind of things in place. And mom and dad probably maybe didn't even hear of those things, and help them think about that. And more extensive end of life decisions, living will, that can come right under the umbrella, the durable power of attorney, the living will. What do they want done and what don't they want done? Mom was from when I told you she kind of elapsed into needing care. They talked about this, a family, and then about there's something like a end of life, and they found out that I had done a pretty extensive work on this. Well, why aren't you taking care? Well, I can. And so we wrote one up for mom, a living will. And so when she, one occasion where she went in the hospital, we had that produced, and it was a long. And I know she was pretty low at that time, and still she was a Christian nurse. And she said, Mary, we're putting this band on your arm, and that this will tell us that if you struggle with breathing and come to the place of not being able to live on, we're going to let you go to Jesus, okay? And I still see a smile on mom's face, and it's okay. And now you understand that, Mary, that this is what, yeah. And she was all right. And so they knew what to do. And so we should help them with those end-of-life decisions. Be sure to have a will. There's not many of us in here that maybe don't need to bother with a will, but most of us do. It's just so important. There's a number of occasions. Scott Showalter down in Virginia, most of you know, there's 5 deaths from a pit. There was a case. And there was a setting where the pastor down there, he said, just don't ever let that happen to people, that they don't have a will. And they had the farm and everything involved, and one little infant child was left. And fortunate enough in that case, the state honored what the family wanted to have happen. The statement that gets made, well, if you don't have a will, the state gets everything. Well, that's not really true. The state gets to making the decisions what happens, and often will be different than what you would do. So you should have them, encourage them to have wills. Help them with funeral plans. It's okay to talk about that. And they may say, well, in mom's case, in her aged, and dad, he told me in that short period of time, he wants me to go here and there and get his will. and go over it and see that everything is okay. So I took it to the attorney, and he had set it up so that all four of us boys were on as executors. And the attorney said, really? He said, you should only make that as one. Everything you do, all four of you have to be there to sign. And really, the will says what's supposed to happen. The executor just carries out what's supposed to happen. Maybe decide how to sell the house or something like that, but in general. So we changed that. In Mom's case, she pulled out the funeral plans pretty well in place. Very, very helpful. Extremely helpful. And if you're not sure how to approach your dad and mom, to say that, you can blame it on me. Tell me, we were at church last night. We had this fellow here. He was kind of on end of life things, and he's talked about durable power of attorney. And I'm not quite sure what it's all about, but I know that I should be working on it. And do you have something like that? And power of God? Well, yeah, the power of God. But you also have, and so help them. And you can blame it on me. It's okay to do that because it will help them to think it through and give you an opportunity. Talk about funeral. This is one that's not alone with me. There's a good book out. A proper burial is not cremation. Okay? In the Old Testament and through the Bible, where the body was burned, and that was evil settings. And you remember in Genesis 47, 49, Jacob was concerned about a good burial, and Joseph took care of that. And so when those things happen and those are in place, right burials, you don't have a lot of fuming at the end of life. One of the things I encourage you is have things in place, and to encourage mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, to have things in place so the family doesn't fume. In our case, it was just a blessed thing. Paul is the one older than I am. I'm the youngest of the boy. So the youngest ought to get the home farm. Isn't that how it works, you know? And I didn't get the home farm. And things were in place so nicely that we could never feel bad about things. And now the home farm is still in the family. It's the next generation now. And it's a real blessing. And so there was other things in place that dad had been placed very nicely. In Genesis 50, I'll leave this for you to read. Genesis 50, 14 to 21. Now dad died, and now it was Joseph and the brothers, and they were scared. They said, now what's going to happen? Now that he's gone, we're going to be in trouble. We're going to pay for the way we handle things. And so they connived some more and said, they went to Joseph and said, we talked to dad, and dad said, you should forgive us the past. And Joseph makes this powerful proclamation that what you did evil for me, God meant it for good, and it's okay, it's forgiven. And he goes on, and it's okay. One of the most painful things is for elderly people to watch children fume and fight. Personal contact. Love spells time. If they're in a home, go visit them. And be careful, again, that they know their limits and what their limits are. I encourage you, as much as you can go, they have to learn too that you have a life to live and you have family to see, and you can't always be there. Phone calls. One of the settings that, you learn what they like. We can't go see Mom Graf without taking raspberries or in season and strawberries. And sometimes Joyce has baked things along, and it just does so much for her. And yet she gets fed rather well at the home. So do things like that. Children, take children along. And that works two ways. Children will have memory that they'll never forget with those humorous old age acts that people do. We were Denver Nursing Home. One that's kind of a family joke around us is we went to visit there in Denver, and just kind of a general visit. And there was this lady having a refute with the nurse. She wasn't taking her pills. And the nurse was there trying to get her to take the pills. And this was going back and forth. And so I'll intervene a little bit. And so I got on her side. And I said, those pills would really be helpful for you. And if you take those pills, I don't hear you. And so I tried again. And she'd over and over, I don't hear you. And so that became a family tease. Even the boys sometimes, when they weren't quite in agreement, I don't hear you. And so we never abused it real bad. But it's those interesting things that happened at a visit. Take them along. Take reading along. One of the things that happens, that person gets older and grandma and grandpa gets older. You can't sit there and visit. And you go to visit them and you don't know what to say. And it makes them tired because they're not sure what to say. And you're not sure what to say. Take reading along. Remember their level of their mind. Take the partners. Take the little children's story. And we had just got this in our mailbox this morning. I want to read it to you. And they can be relaxed. You can be relaxed. You know what to say. And read it to them. If their mind's a little solid, you can use a youth companion. And one that I always keep a few tracts in my Bible that I always like. One that's always kind of encouraging for me. And I won't take the time to read it necessarily. But looking for the sunrise. I'm not looking for the sunset as the swift years come and go. I'm looking for the sunrise and the golden morning glow, where the light of heaven's glory will break forth upon my sight in the land that knows no sunset nor the darkness of the night. And he goes on, that kind of thing. So have reading along, and it makes everybody feel comfortable, and they can get to that place. There's opportunity for caregiving, and I'm not sure you may or may not know Eli Schlebach. He was from Maryland, Virginia. I'm sure his daughter married up this way, and they moved up, and she was at Denver Nursing Home, and he was bringing her over in a wheelchair, and he was living at home, and she's been attending there now some, and I saw on the Fish Wrapper a few weeks ago an advertisement for an elderly man offering to take care of in-home service. And he spelled out what he would do, Eli Schlebach. What a wonderful thing. This man's able and capable, and he's willing to come to your house or grandpa's house and do care. And tremendous blessing compared to that of going to a home if you need that little bit of help. we'll let the rest lay. Questions? Comments? Amen. Does it kind of make sense? Anybody hear me? legal things are something that a power of attorney, that needs to be a legal document, end of life. Those don't have to be recorded at a courthouse. A power of attorney and wills do need to be recorded through an attorney. Just a living will, that can be picked up. And it says things like that after life is no longer capable of going, don't want additional life support. They don't want extensive testing and things like that. And the medical group is liable for doing and following those instructions. But if they're not able, the power of attorney puts you in that place, and you can make those decisions for them and help them and make some very, very unusual decisions. Financial things, blame that on me a little bit. Are things in order? You mentioned that. It feels like, oh, expecting me to die, and you're wondering about my money? And you think it's yours, and handle very carefully because their thinking is a little limited. And if you can do that earlier on when they are sound, and just talk about that you hear some of these horror stories about this, and I just don't want this to happen to our family. There's a fellow that is a unique setting, and he's saying, a very, very wealthy man, and some of the children could use a little bit of help, but when I die, they can fight over it. I don't want to be bothered with it. What a statement. I think we should be stewards and make decisions and decide what to do. Covered it? I just want to thank you for being here. And we're going to find ourselves at a place where we're one way or the other. And we can help other people that aren't our grandma and grandpa, but don't push it on them. Again, with some of the thoughts that we learned tonight, stay at home with those and use them for your own, put them in your own nuggets where they fit. Heavenly Father, we thank you for life and breath and strength. We thank you for the many blessings that we enjoy, that you've blessed us with so much, and family, and Lord, that you've given us biblical principles of how to live and how to live as families. And with that joy and privilege gives a setting where we need to make decisions that are sometimes hard. And we just pray tonight that these, my brothers and sisters, will have gained nuggets tonight to think about their setting and what you have for them, and be able to make wise decisions in their family, and so that they would be able to meet end of life with joy and do it with dignity and character. And we just pray, God, that you would help us to be loving and kind when the elderly get more feeble and limited. Help us to be patient and to be careful. We just ask for wisdom as we meet these settings. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.